Bo's Bar and Green Lawn, The Hotline. They're a cool band too. I've seen them. Cup Coffee House in Wantagh, Jay Riley, and at Berkner Hall, the Brookhaven National Lab, Project Floyd. If you missed any of those, you can catch our website at WUSB.FM. And if you've got any gigs you would like to have announced, send an email to scene, S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM.
Okay, thanks for the abrupt ending there. It's 6:03. You're listening to the radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's Tuesday evening. That means, once again, it's time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. A Tuesday evening that's very special because, for once, there is no primary going on tonight. We can take a break from all this nonsense. That's not really nonsense, but we like to call it nonsense. It's determining the leader of the free world, after all, and I dare say that that might be an important thing. I saw this this movie, and you all should see it if you can. Called Recount. It was on HBO a couple of nights ago. And I imagine it's making the BitTorrent film festival circuit now. It's basically about the election of 2000. And you remember that one, right? The one that dragged on for a month and got us George W. Bush as president. But when you watch a movie like this, remember, we lived through the whole thing. I mean, I saw it day by day. I was watching the news constantly. But when you see it in the form of a movie, you realize, wow, there was some pretty serious stuff going on there. And who knows what really was happening behind the scenes. This is one interpretation of it. Not too far from the way I understood it to be happening after seeing the first-hand accounts. But you just saw all the things. When you add them all together, you know, sometimes you're aware of injustices and things that aren't quite right. And, yeah, you know, that sucks, that's life, let's move on. But when you start piling them together and making a big sort of sculpture out of them all, you realize that, wow, there's really an agenda here. There's really something going on. Not to sound conspiracy-minded or, you know, like a 9/11 Looney Tune, but, wow, this is... I'm going to get mail for that, aren't I? This is something that... It was right there. It was right there how they stopped the recount. Why would anybody want to stop a recount? You know, you just ask those simple questions. You had a situation where the stupid hanging chads. Now, of course, when we think of the hanging chads now, we think of confused senior citizens messing it all up. But, you know, that's not really how it worked. That's not really how it went on. You had a system that was basically flawed. And it's explained pretty clearly how the system was flawed. If you ever had to punch a chat, I've never had to do that in my life. I've always used the same mechanical voting machines that we have up here in New York State. And in Florida and in other parts of the country, they have or had this insane system where you actually had to punch a hole in a piece of paper. And sometimes the piece of paper didn't line up properly with the name of the candidate that you wanted to vote for. Whose fault was that? Who knows? But I consider it a design flaw. But what really is a design flaw is the fact that you could punch one of these things, and the chad, that's the thing that's is left over, the hanging piece of paper that when you punch through the main piece of paper, it should fall off, but sometimes it doesn't. There are many reasons why it might not. Maybe you didn't punch hard enough, or, and this is something that a lot of people don't realize, maybe the machine was never really cleaned out so that there's nothing but a whole bunch of these discarded chads inside the machine so that when you punch it, it doesn't really detach because it's all full underneath. And then when the punch card, which is what I guess this thing is called, is run through the machine, that little hanging Chad gets reattached or brought back up into the main card, and a machine does not see that there is, in fact, a hole there. And then you have the situations where you have the dimpled Chads where somebody didn't push quite hard enough, but it's obvious that they pushed. They pushed something. So you had all of that going on. But then you also had people that were not allowed to vote because their name was on the felon list. Yeah, in Florida, if you're a felon, you're not allowed to vote. That's one crazy thing right there. But get this, if your name was the same as somebody who was on the felon list, you also were turned away. Not in every case, I would imagine, but certainly a lot of them, something like 20,000. So there was all these things that were going on, that were wrong. And it seems to me the most important thing in a situation like that was simply to, let's count them. Let's count the votes and make sure they're right. And that's what was started a few times. You had the Florida Supreme Court saying that the count must go through, and then you had the U.S. Supreme Court stepping in saying, no, stop counting. Stop counting. I mean, I don't get it. At one point, they stepped in and stopped the counting. They had 2 days to finish the counting, and they were going to do it. They had all these people counting. It was a statewide recount. All these people were recounting, and we would have had an answer. We would have had a final answer to how many people voted for who? For Bush or for Gore? The Supreme Court stepped in and said, stop this. Because the future of the nation is at risk, or some bizarreness like that, where democracy was being called into question. So there was some kind of threat to the natural order of things. And then, a day later, when they had to basically explain it in detail, they said, well, the deadline's only one day away. There's no way that they can finish in time. After stopping the deadline themselves, they made it so that it was impossible for them to finish by the deadline, and then used that as the reason for not finishing. So little things like that, they all kind of add up. But it doesn't get away from the fact that the system was flawed to start with. Obviously, there was something seriously, seriously wrong with the way the votes were taken and counted in Florida. And it just seems to me that we should know. And to this day, I'd like to know, has anyone ever counted the ballots? I mean, obviously we can't change the past 8 years. But wouldn't it be nice to know, one way or another? What's preventing that from happening? Is it money? Because I'll kick in $20 for this. I will. I'll kick in more. I will. I'm sure we can get a bunch of people to do this. But these ballots are still sitting in a warehouse someplace, aren't they? I'm not sure why. Do they always save ballots forever in warehouses? It's a lot of warehouses. But I understand they're there. And if they have never been counted, wouldn't that be a good project for those of you in high school civics classes to embark in? Let's count the votes. Once and for all. Now, of course, the question is, how do you count the votes? How do you interpret the votes? Well, let's do it in all different possibilities. Let's interpret the dimpled Chads as intent. Let's interpret it as not intent. That way we have all different manner of tabulations, and we can just sort of see for ourselves. But I want to know. I'm curious. I'm curious if we were basically sold a bill of goods. Now, keep in mind, in 2000, Gore had already won the popular vote by, what, half a million or something? He won by, I think, a pretty substantial margin. He ever hung out with half a million people. So a lot of people. Now, if you count the popular vote, then yeah, he should have won. But unfortunately, our nation doesn't work that way. We work with this electoral college nonsense, and that's why Florida was so important. Because we needed those electoral votes in Florida to decide one way or another who was going to be the president. It was the tiebreaker state, more or less. And so every single electoral vote, I think there were, 27 of them or something in Florida, would go to the winner of the popular vote in Florida. And at one point, that came down to under 100 people. So it was madness. So check this film out. It's a little dull at points because you are watching a movie about people counting and people filing lawsuits and things like that, but you know, they make it interesting for the most part. They take a few liberties. They really make that Catherine Harris woman look very ditzy, but who knows? I wasn't there. Maybe she really is. interesting historical perspective and something that we should never forget, because that was history. That was history being made there. A lot of us lived through it. In fact, I would say most of us lived through it. I don't think there's many eight-year-olds listening to the show. So we should take a very keen interest and try to find out what really happened and make sure it never happens again. Yeah, the current election campaign is nice and normal compared to that, isn't it? Of course, the campaign seemed nice and normal up until Election Day. This could all happen again. It could all come down to a state like Florida or Ohio or God knows what, where there are improprieties. And yeah, there were improprieties in Ohio last time. That's a whole other issue. That's a whole other film. So, yeah, there are no primaries tonight, so there's no reason for us to talk about politics other than that little aside. But next week is, June 3rd is next Tuesday? So that's it. That's when the last of the primaries takes place. Now, I think in a way it's kind of cool because all the states have their little time in the spotlight. And so next week it ends. Yeah, no more. It's over. And there's really not much you can do. I guess a week from tomorrow, if my prediction is correct, a week from tomorrow, Hillary Clinton will finally say, okay, that's it. Let's throw our support behind Obama. Not doing that means taking this to the convention in August, and that's just going to be it's going to be madness. It's going to be divisive. And think of it, all that time, June, July, August, those are 3 months of unity that the Democratic Party will not have against McCain/Bush. And yes, I continue to say McCain/Bush because, yes, I know there are differences. I know there are differences between the platforms of McCain and Bush. I know McCain is more competent than Bush. I know he knows how to read. I know all sorts of things are different. But too many things are the same. For instance, just standing in that party that brought us into Iraq, that has killed so many people, and yes, they take the responsibility for that. We just went through another Memorial Day, and I saw all these tributes to the soldiers that have fallen. And the thing I didn't see enough of was anger. Anger at the fact that this did not have to be. That they did not get sent over there to protect our way of life or to fight for our freedom. They got sent over there based on a lie, and they died for that same purpose. And people are going to get away with it. And I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted that that's going to happen. That we're going to let them get away with it. They're going to leave office and get high-paying jobs as consultants or speakers on some kind of high-paid guest circuit, and we're going to allow them to just live a nice, quiet life. You know, I think there are so many other options to that. So many other options. Involving courtrooms, involving prisons, involving crowds of people who never stop shouting at them. Like today in Denver, for instance. Today in Denver, McCain was giving a talk. He was interrupted, I think, 3 or 4 times by anti-war hecklers. That's great. We need more of that. We need more people to stand up and say, this is a word I can't say on the radio, but you can say it in a public crowd. Yeah, they'll shut you up. They'll kick you out. Maybe they'll even arrest you. But you know what? It's important. It's important to speak up. And that's what we saw today. And it's great because they were chanting. This was one of these precious moments. They were chanting endless war. While McCain was trying to speak, they were chanting endless war. Now, the crowd that had come to see him, obviously, they were supporting McCain and against the protesters. So what did they do? They started chanting McCain, McCain, over and over again. So for a few minutes, you had this marvelous back and forth of McCain, endless war, McCain, endless war. It almost could be a campaign slogan, couldn't it? I just hope somebody got that on tape because, wow, almost like that don't come along very often. But yeah, the two of them are similar on too many very distressing issues. And Iraq is right at the top of that list. Anybody who maintains that they're going to stay in Iraq until they win some phantom victory that nobody is ever going to be able to see. I mean, how do you measure victory against an enemy you can't even define? It's just a concept. The war on terror. Terror will never surrender. You know, it's very subjective what terror is. So it's never going to happen. This is a war that will never end. And McCain has said that he will never leave. He will never surrender. Now, that's implying that Obama has said that he's going to surrender. Obama simply is saying that, and Clinton too, that this has gone on long enough, and we're not gaining anything good from this, and it's certainly not helping the Iraqi people, and we need to do something else. And McCain wants to do the same thing. So McCain and Bush are appearing tonight. Now, this was supposed to be a public appearance, the two of them together, but it's been changed to a private appearance. And they say it's got nothing to do with the fact that Bush's approval ratings are in the toilet and on their way to the Hudson River or wherever they go. No, it's just a coincidence, I guess. I don't know. But that's what's been going on politics-wise. And that's why the Democrats have to unite after next week, so that they don't allow this to continue. And yeah, you know, I would blame them as much as I would blame Republicans for winning. And of course, the American people for putting them there again. It would be so wrong on so many levels. And sometimes you just have to really stand up and be loud and make your voice heard. Like the protesters did today in Denver. When I watched the movie, Recount, there was a pivotal moment where the military ballots were being called into question. Now, get this. This is what the military ballots, how it works. They can get sent in with no postmark and no witness signature. Now, because I guess there are extenuating circumstances when you're in the military, but obviously this opens things up to all kinds of fraud. Anybody, anywhere can send in a ballot, not sign it, not put a postmark on it, and it'll make it in and be counted. And they could be sent after the election. So there are all kinds of questions being raised. And the pivotal moment came when Joe Lieberman was on the phone, actually on, I think, Meet the Press, and he waffled on the issue of objecting to just blindly counting anything labeled a military ballot. And by waffling on that, he basically lost the battle. By refusing to challenge, by refusing to speak up, by caving in to those people who said, well, there's no postmark on a bullet that hits a soldier in the head, or something stupid like that, which makes absolutely no sense. So, yeah, you got to be strong. You got to speak up. You got to make your feelings heard. So important. And it's so discouraged in our society. So, I'd like to hear other people's opinions, obviously. And this hour, I'd like to take some phone calls. Our phone number is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. I'd like to especially hear from people who have not called us, let's say in the last month. How about that? Because there are so many people out there. I get letters from people. And I'd like to encourage especially first-time callers, because I want to hear different voices. I want to hear different opinions. I won't have the same conversations over and over again, because I do that every day. Same people, getting sick of them. So, again, we'll be taking phone calls probably in about 20 minutes or so. 631-632-9872. Please tell your friends, tell your enemies, get people to call. Let's have a nice conversation about various other things going on in the world. Outside right now, it's storming and raining and all kinds of cool things are happening. I love inclement weather. I think it's one of the greatest inventions of mankind. We have thunderstorms here and pelting rain. Nothing to compare, though, with other parts of the world. You know, tornadoes and earthquakes. And I guess, I'm not sure if earthquake is considered a weather condition, but tornado certainly is. And lately there have been all kinds of tornadoes all over the country. Not here. We don't get those. But just seeing these things form, you realize how nature always has the final say. There's nothing you can do to prevent yourself from being completely obliterated if nature decides that this is the time and this is the place. And you just watch the video that people have gotten of some of these storms, some of the natural events that have happened. And it soon becomes apparent how little it all matters. And I think that's a good thing. It's a good thing for us to be put in our place to realize that, you know, we think everything is so important, but you know what? You stand on the surface of Mars, and George W. Bush and all this nonsense going on means absolutely nothing. And that's right next door. You know, so think of the entire universe. Think of what's out there, the vastness of it all, the infinite vastness that just never ends. And somehow that gives me hope. That gives me hope that there's always more, always something else. And no matter what you have to deal with, whether it's a dictatorial parent or a school that doesn't understand or a president who is a numbskull, it only matters in this small space for this brief amount of time. Well, yeah, feels good to get that out. Speaking of Mars, did anybody catch the landing? This is so cool. This should be the front page, front item of every news story, every place. But basically, another one of the Mars landers went down on the planet, this time by the North Pole of Mars. And yes, they have ice underneath the surface. This has been pretty much confirmed. And what this particular a rover, or whatever it's called, is going to do is dig and analyze the ice. Now, I mean, this is unprecedented. They can actually find evidence of life or past life in this. Never before has water actually been touched on another planet. This is incredible. And I'm lucky enough to get NASA TV. NASA actually has a TV channel. And it's the goofiest channel ever, because while these guys are great at sending things up into outer space and landing on distant planets, video production, wow, they have these things known as raw feeds, where people just are staring into the camera and not saying anything, or they have no sound, or all kinds of mess-ups going on. But what they do manage to capture is just the happiness when something succeeds. They basically have cameras just in the control center, and you see people jumping up and down and shouting and clapping and hugging each other. And during this entire Mars landing, it was just the coolest thing to have on for hours. Just, you felt like you were in the room. And you'd see them posing for pictures, you'd see them passing around candy and having cake, and, you know, the kinds of things you just never would see on television, because, well, that doesn't bring in the ratings, does it? But for me, it has me transfixed. Because it doesn't get any more real than that. And if it was up to me, all the money would go to NASA so they could just keep exploring and finding out cool things and jumping up and down and clapping and having cake and things like that. Because that's what living is all about. Yeah, so you should get your cable company or your satellite company to get this channel, NASA TV. It's definitely not a ratings winner, but it's one of the coolest things to watch. Sometimes they just have people on the space station for hours, just sort of, you watch them working, floating upside down, playing games, and it's kind of like having a big screensaver on your television set. So, a lot of fun. I also want to get Al Jazeera in English. That would be nice. That's my other... We're lucky here. In the Long Island area, we're lucky because we have BBC World, we have Euronews on our... local cable monopoly, which is Cablevision, and now they own Newsday now, so they're really expanding, owning everything, but at least we have decent international news, and hopefully Al Jazeera in English would be the next edition, the next logical thing to have. Just variety, it's all about variety. Okay, let's see what else is going on. Well, obviously gas prices are a big issue, and... it's something that I'm having a lot of fun with, because I'm just watching them go up. And yeah, you know, it affects me. It affects everybody, but it affects the stupid people who went out and got these huge, massive vehicles of gas guzzlers. It's affecting them so much more. And it's just, you know, I get a sadistic thrill out of seeing them suffer, because they've caused me so much misery over the years. In fact, on my way over here, it's pouring rain, pelting down from the skies, flash floods everywhere. Okay, and big, massive puddles. So I'm driving down that little two-way street, you know, the kind with a WL line down the middle, and this stupid SUV heading the other way decides that he's going to avoid the puddle by swerving into my lane. He'd rather hit me, an oncoming vehicle, than go into a puddle. What is the logic behind that? Who thinks like this? These are the people that I don't mind seeing suffer. The more, the better. And the way it's working now, gas prices are going up by an average of about a penny a day. Yeah, think about that. A penny a day. In fact, in the New York area, I heard this on the way over, 12 cents in the last week. Now I'm paying over $4.50 for diesel for the old smart car there, and I don't quite understand why that is. Diesel is usually supposed to be cheaper, but whatever, it doesn't matter to me. But it does make a difference for all the truck drivers out there, because obviously they're paying a lot more for their 18-wheel rigs, and those trucks are what bring all sorts of things to us, food and clothing and all sorts of other things that get moved around. So yeah, it's affecting everything as far as prices because of that. If there's going to be any kind of an amnesty or holiday on gas taxes or prices or whatever, I would look at diesel before I look at anything else. Not that I think we should even be looking at diesel to reduce the price. I think fuel should be expensive because it is a finite commodity, and we should be thinking of alternatives. And we should have been for the last 20 or 30 years, at least, since this all started back in the 70s, when we started to realize that, yeah, you know what, we're going to run out of oil someday. And it's getting more and more expensive. So now maybe we'll see things like more rail systems being built. Maybe we'll see alternative ways of getting things around, more windmills, more solar power. Maybe we'll just see a more intelligent energy policy because we're being backed into a corner and forced into it. Wouldn't it be great to have more rail systems so that you didn't have to waste all this money on driving or taking airplanes? Everything is going up. And other countries aren't having quite the same problem. Everyone is paying a lot for certain things, but if you have alternatives, at least you have something. And increasingly we're finding ourselves in a position where we have nothing. But it is having a positive effect at a time when gas prices are at an all-time high. Americans have curtailed their driving at a historic rate. The Department of Transportation said figures from March show the steepest decrease ever recorded in driving. Steepest decrease ever. Now, compared with March of last year, 4.3% decline in what Americans are driving. 11 billion fewer miles, according to the Department of Transportation. That's the sharpest yearly drop for any month in Federal Highway Administration history. And how long has the Federal Highway Administration been around? Since 1942. And I got to tell you, there wasn't much in the way of highways before then, so this is the steepest decline ever. That's a good thing. Now, it doesn't mean people aren't going places. Maybe people are carpooling. Maybe people are figuring out other ways to get around. I mean, I grew up in suburbia without a car, and it was difficult. It was that, I mean, you got beatings at school for that because you were different. And yeah, only family in miles that didn't have a car, but you know what? We survived. We survived, and I think a lot of people can figure out how to survive, too. We improve services a bit. We have more bus systems, more light rail, more trains. Then this doesn't have to be a bad thing. And the rest of the world has learned this. Now it's time for us. Now, hundreds of truck drivers have parked their rigs on roadways in London and in other cities across Britain today to protest a more than 30% increase in the price of diesel fuel in the past year. Around between 600 and 1,000 trucks from a whole range of companies took part in the protest. The price of fuel in the UK has skyrocketed. It's now so high, according to a spokesman, that it's threatening the UK road transport industry. Diesel now costs an average of £1.28, that's $2.52 a liter. Okay, we'll do all the conversions in a second. That makes it, ready? $11.50 a gallon. Yeah, and our average is $3.93. Okay, so this is what, we're still in fantasy land over here. I think it would be great if fuel cost $11.50 a gallon. Yeah, we'd be in shock, but we'd get over it, and we'd adjust our way of living. But wow, think about that. That's England. $11.50 a gallon. But yeah, it's causing all kinds of mayhem and protests and things like that. The International Red Cross warned today of a possible surge in food-related violence. Yeah, food-related violence because of soaring commodity prices. And that's increasing hunger around the world. Most of the debate so far on the so-called food crisis has focused on boosting aid to poorer countries. The second dimension is there is also the potential of food-related violence. The ICRC, that's the International Committee of the Red Cross, has to shoulder a big responsibility, according to a spokesman, when that violence reaches the level of an armed conflict. You can imagine when you have countries where you already have an armed conflict, where you already have a high level of violence, and you have at the same time a lot of poor and extremely vulnerable people. The price level for them is not only a question of higher prices, it becomes a question of survival, of just having access to food. So yeah, this is definitely a concern. All right, so we're facing all sorts of problems down the road. It's going to be interesting, though. But if you insist on buying a car, you might want to go to Kansas City, Missouri. That's where a Missouri car dealer said last Thursday that sales have been soaring at his auto and truck business since he launched a promotion that promises buyers a free handgun or a $250 gas card with every purchase. Max Motors, a small Butler, Missouri dealership that has as its logo a grimacing cowboy wielding a pistol, has sold more than 30 cars and trucks in the last 3 days, far more than its normal volume. And owner Mark Muller credits his decision to start offering buyers their choice of a $250 gas card or a $250 credit at a gun shop. Oh, America, you gotta love it. This thing has taken off. Sales have quadrupled, said Muller. The store sells both used and new vehicles, including General Motors and Ford products. Every buyer so far, except one guy from Canada and one old guy, has elected to take the gun. Muller recommends his customers select a Kel-Tec 380 pistol. It's a nice little handgun that fits in your pocket. He said the promotion was inspired by Illinois Senator Barack Obama, who is vying with Hillary Clinton to be the Democratic, not why you know all that. We did it because of Barack Obama. He said all those people in the Midwest, you've got to have compassion for them because they're clinging to their guns and their Bibles. I found that quite offensive. Sounds a little bitter to me. Well, okay, great way to prove that that's not true then, isn't it? So, yeah, how to give away guns with cars. We all go to church on Sunday and we all carry guns, he said. I've got a gun in my pocket right now, so you better get this quote right. I have a rifle in my truck. We've got to shoot the coyotes out there. They're attacking our cows, our chickens. Okay, now, coyotes, what's that a ref? That's a metaphor for what exactly? Mexicans, maybe? And they're attacking our cows, our chickens. That must be our wives and our children, right? Oh, come on. I mean, why do you carry a pistol in your pocket to attack coyotes? At least tell the truth. Anyway, we're not clinging to nothing. Certainly not clinging to grammar. We're just damn glad to live in a free country where you can have a gun if you want. This is the way it ought to be. Okay, whatever. Whatever. That's your life. Live it as you choose. What else? Well, money might be changing. This is kind of cool. I mean, money keeps changing. I know. The $5 bills, that's the coolest one so far. You know, where you turn it over and you got sort of the purple five there. It's a start. It's the most color we've ever had in our money. But now things might change even more. Federal Appeals Court ruled last week that the U.S. Treasury Department is violating the law by failing to design and issue currency that is readily distinguishable to blind and visually impaired people. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit upheld a 2006 district court ruling that could force the United States to redesign its money so blind people can distinguish between values. Suggested solutions include making bills different sizes, including raised markings, or using foil printing, which is a method of hot stamping that is tactically discernible. Now, this is great because this is how they do it in Europe. They have euros of different sizes. The smallest note, which is what, the 5-euro note, is the smallest one. I've never seen a 500-euro note, but I believe that's the biggest one, and that is the biggest one physically as well. Every single bill gets a little bit bigger in size. That would be cool. That would be an amazing thing to have. Our money might actually start to look interesting, like the rest of the world. You can go to the poorest country in the world, and yet their money looks a lot more attractive than what we produce. Same bland green. It's horrible. But, yeah, changes. Changes are good. We should have more changes. What else is happening in this country of ours? Well, an apparent stranger shot the bride, groom, and two other people at an outdoor wedding in Arkansas, then was arrested after being chased by outraged guests. The wedding was just ending Saturday when the suspect approached with a 9mm pistol and opened fire. I didn't even hear about this on the news, you know? It just wasn't there. It's not significant. Pope County Sheriff Lieutenant Aaron Duvat said no one else was hurt, I'm sorry, Duval, sorry about that. About 50 people, including children, had attended the ceremony along Piney Creek, north of Dover, at a spot the lieutenant said was popular for picnicking and swimming. The suspect was not associated with the wedding at all. No one knew him. Police arrested Patrick Paul Duval. Wait a minute, he's got the same name as the sheriff. That's weird, they don't even mention that. Same last name, can you believe that? Wow. Okay. So Lieutenant Aaron Duval and the suspect is Patrick Paul Duval. I swear I didn't notice this when I first read the story. He was chased into a Russellville restaurant parking lot. All right. Duval declined to identify, this is the good Duval, declined to identify the four people who were injured by the bad Duval, but he said the bridegroom and a third victim remained in the hospital Sunday. One victim was treated and released. So, yeah, just more random shooting. It's makes life interesting. And something else that makes life very interesting, get this, a Continental Flight 1544, was flying at 5,000 feet, about 11 miles east of Bush Intercontinental Airport after takeoff this morning, when the pilot called the tower to report an object headed toward the plane. The pilot described seeing a fast-moving object with a thick smoke trail nearing his airspace. The FAA now says it thinks the object was some kind of model rocket. This happened yesterday. Was it yesterday? I believe, yes. Both the FAA and the Houston Area Joint Terrorism Task Force continue to investigate the incident that was reported yesterday afternoon. Neither said conclusively what the pilot saw was indeed a model rocket, but an FAA spokesperson told KHOU 11 News that it was likely a high-powered model rocket. It is a federal crime to launch a rocket of any sort without notifying the FAA. The plane was at about 5,000 feet at the time of the sighting, and the flight continued on to Cleveland. Now, John Etkin is an officer with one of the local model rocket clubs in the area, and when the FBI told him what had been reported, the rocket enthusiast was shocked. This is completely outside of all of our safety codes and all of our practices. We actually have a lot... we actually behave, rather, a lot like visual flight rules pilots. That is, if we can't see clear airspace and already have permission to be in that airspace, we are not allowed to launch, and we don't. Etkin says it's certainly possible for a model rocket to get that high up, but he also said the description given by the pilot doesn't match up. At that height, a model would have been coasting for quite some time and maybe emitting a small trail of white smoke and not the thick smoke like the pilot's report. He explained that while model rocketry is supposed to be fun, it is also highly regulated. Regulated by the same federal agency that has oversight of the airlines, the FAA. Now, the FAA confirmed that there were no requests to launch or notifications filed for the Houston area for Monday. There are also no launch sites within 50 miles of Bush Airport. The Boeing 737, 148 passengers and six crew members aboard, took off from Terminal C at Bush Airport at 10:17 a.m. Monday, and arrived at Hopkins International Airport in Cleveland at 2:13 p.m., 9 minutes later than scheduled. wow, I mean, I think that's a big deal. Nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows what was in the air, what almost hit the airplane. I think that's something. Is it a heat-seeking missile that somebody sent up? Who knows? All sorts of possibilities. Okay, so, yeah, a lot of fun things going on, a lot of fun happenings. I saw something amazing in Brooklyn the other day. Decided to go over there, hang out with some people, and walked over the Manhattan Bridge. That's always a fun thing to do. If you ever want to have fun, just walk over one of the many bridges that connect New York to Brooklyn or various other places. There's this one thing that they have that they've set up at that little pier by the Brooklyn Bridge. They've set up a giant telescope. And if you look through the giant telescope, do you know what you see? You see people very, very far away. You see people in London. You see people waving back at you. It's the coolest thing ever. You basically line up. And when you get to the front of the line, you look into this massive screen, and you see other people doing the same thing, except they're overseas. They're in London. And you hold up signs, and signs say something like, jump up and down. They jump up and down. Everybody cheers, and waves at each other. And there's no sound. You just see the people. Now, obviously, it's not really a telescope. It's not really, because there's no way to do that. The curvature of the Earth, you know, it's not. Maybe it could have a mirror or something up in the sky, but no, that's not what they're doing. It's really just a glorified webcam. It really is. They're using a broadband connection of some sort to get overseas, but it looks really cool. It's not jerky in any way. It's on a big screen, and it's basically set up in a way so that you feel like you're looking through a telescope. The fact that there's no sound, for instance. So you get that same sense of thrill, and it's got sort of this Jules Verne look to it, you know. It's this massive structure. It looks like something that would be invented back in the 1920s. And it's just, it's cool. It's one of these kind of romantic things that you see that make you think about science and the vastness of space and the mysteries and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's a bit of coolness. All right, let me give out the phone number. I can hear lightning. I hear lightning in my headphones, so I know there's a massive storm going on outside. Of course, that doesn't mean anything to anybody who's out of the area, but maybe there's a massive storm where you are as well. But it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool what's going on with the fury of nature outside. Anyway, our phone number is 632-9872, 632-WUSB, area code 631. And let me read a letter or two, and then we'll see how many phone calls are coming in. Hopefully... You know what, should I go into delay? Let me go into delay now, get that over with, because that's always a big ordeal and something I invariably mess up in some way. So let me get an ID together and put that up there, switch that over to here, switch that like this, and with any luck...
Hey, this is Robert from BRMC, the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, and you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook, New York.
We're in delay. And I always have to wonder what happens. Yeah, of course, my phrase was separated by a legal ID. I know that. But that's how we do things. Now I'm 7 or 8 seconds behind the rest of you. And that makes it safe for the FCC and toddlers who might be listening. Okay, let's read a letter or two. Our email address, otw@2600.com. Now, last week, as you recall, we talked about sitting down for the Pledge of Allegiance. And today was supposed to be a big, massive event around the country where people sat down when the Pledge of Allegiance was recited and wherever they recite these pledges of allegiance. I don't know of any place that does it, but I know they exist. Well, I don't think it happened because I didn't see any news reports about it. I didn't see anybody talking about this massive act of civil disobedience that was taking place today, how people were standing up for their right to be free by sitting down. Really good catchphrase there, but no, I didn't hear about it. And that means that we didn't take advantage of the PR. Now, I said I couldn't do it myself. I said it was up to you, the listeners. But I guess we just got to go back to the drawing board and maybe get a little bit more PR about this. We did get a bunch of letters, though, about the Pledge of Allegiance. So I'll read a couple of those. But if people sat down for the Pledge of Allegiance today, I'd like to know about it. Call us, 631-632-WUSB. I am a senior at Technical High School in St. Cloud, Minnesota, and for the past 4 years, I have refused to stand for the weekly recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance. Weekly. Interesting. I didn't know they did it weekly. That's kind of strange. As we do it during homeroom, and my homeroom is in the audio-visual room, the impact is minimal, but sitting down for our country always brightens my Monday. During one of the first assemblies in my freshman year, two of my friends were sitting during the pledge, and a teacher came and separated them. It was a pretty small punishment, but the principle is the same. One of those principal L-E, not principal A-L. One of those same friends told a veteran that was speaking to my U.S. history class that he would not fulfill his draft duty if called upon, but instead move to Canada or go to prison. The World War II vet smiled at him and said he was glad that we were able to make our own choices. He proceeded to claim that women should not be part of the Marines because he would not have felt safe with women fighting beside him. It's interesting to see the views public schools are pushing onto the future leaders of this country. Keep up the great work. I always look forward to Tuesday evening. Signed, Will. Will, thank you very much for writing. The recent news of students being suspended for refusing to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance brings back my own junior high school memories. When I was 15 and living in Utah back in 1999... I had a teacher who would belittle and harass me for refusing to stand for or recite the pledge. What's an uppity atheist kid to do? I called the ACLU. Good for you. I don't recall the specifics of the agreement reached between the school district and the ACLU to quickly settle the matter, but the teacher had to apologize to me, and for the rest of the school year, I was allowed to stand out in the hall during the national anthem and pledge. But you know what? You were standing. Yeah, they tricked you into standing out in the hallway. You should be allowed to stay in your classroom. Shouldn't be a big deal. You shouldn't be separated. Anyway, the following year, I heard from others at my former junior high that the school had completely discontinued doing the pledge ritual, presumably because it was too controversial. I wish the best of luck to the next generation of conscientious pledge objectors. Signed, Sabrina. Sabrina, thank you very much for your courage and for writing in to share it with us. You know, it's not the pledge itself is controversial. It's what people expect you to do during the pledge. You know, the fact that they will not tolerate any form of dissent, when dissent is the whole reason why this country was formed in the first place. So, yeah, you damn well better not only accept dissent, but embrace it. All right, are we going to take any phone calls? Because I don't see them coming in. I don't see them. And we only have a few minutes left. Let's not make this the same thing where all the calls come in after 7 o'clock. 631-632-9872. Remember, I like to get people who don't call in every week, you know. I mean, I love the voices that we hear, but I want to hear other voices. I want to hear other people out there. See, one call on the line. Thank you for calling in. Let's get two, and we'll go to the phones. Okay, dear Emmanuel, when I was in high school, my girlfriend used to sing the national anthem for basketball games. I would go with her, and when she would sing, I would just sit on the ground and not take my hat off. Every time, the principal would come up and yell at me and say I was insulting him and the country. I would tell him that he is insulting me by yelling at me for exercising my right to do as I wish. I said I am showing more support for my country for being a free mind and not being a sheep that walks into battle to be shot. He would get real mad at me and would push me around till I left. Nice guy. I always laughed about it. Signed, I don't know how to pronounce this name, L-I-N-G-K. All right. I still see just one phone call. We need at least two phone calls before I can go to the phones. That's like my little rule here. Yeah, I know. It's no real reason for it. I just feel more comfortable when there's more than one call coming in. You can understand that. All right. Let's address a couple of other issues. Stay on the line, please, whoever's calling in, or if you get hung up on... Okay, look, I'm a reasonable person. There's that other call coming in. Let's take the phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Right now I'm on 347 heading back into Stony Brook.
What's the weather like outside?
It stinks. I've got black skies.
Oh.
Lots of rain.
Black skies. And it's not nighttime, so that's really cool. So that could be tornado weather, couldn't it?
It could very well be, actually, yeah. If it was a little bit warmer, I bet you that's where we'd have a twister or two.
Wow. See, we don't have twister. We had one in Brooklyn, actually, last year. We do have them occasionally, but nothing like the Midwest or, you know, the plains. You know, I don't want you to risk your life driving in a storm and talking on the phone, but is there any point that you wanted to bring up?
Oh, well, I've got my hands free. I always take care of business.
Okay, but still, you know, you do have to concentrate on the road, and having my voice coming into your head might distract you, especially if I sound like a car horn or something.
That's okay. I'll do well.
Okay.
What I wanted to ask was, excuse me, it's actually 2 points, and then I'll hang up after that. What makes you think that John McCain is not a, a pretend conservative? I mean, he did swap parties once around, and I'm thinking that he might be doing this just so people, so Republicans or conservatives have a place to go or where they can feel warm and cuddly, and when he gets in, do another about face.
Well, maybe so, but what I object to the most is his embracing of such things as the torture bill and George W. Bush's policies in general. Yes, he shows some...
Just until he gets in, and who knows?
Yeah,
he might even do an about face.
But don't you think it'd get in a lot easier if he distanced himself from these things and criticized them openly? Because, you know, this is the most unpopular president ever. These are the worst policies ever. Why would he back these things up? Why would he support Bush in any way?
Well, that's true, too. I guess that makes sense. All right. I didn't think of it along those lines.
I mean, it just seems like an easy way, but... you know, I'm happy. I'm happy to see him support Bush. I'm happy to see him show up in the same places. I just hope the American people don't fall for this. I mean, who knows what they have planned for the campaign, but I'm sure you're going to see a lot of things about bravery and standing up to enemies and not bowing into terrorism. and stupidity like that that will be thrown out at the Democratic nominee, whoever that might be.
Yeah, that's right. Think about that. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, you're talking about the gas prices and all, you know, how the prices of SUVs and things like that have dropped significantly.
Yeah. May I ask what kind of vehicle you're driving, by the way?
Oh, actually, I am in a truck. It's a company truck.
Okay. All right. Do you need to be in a truck, though? I mean, are you hauling heavy things right now?
No, it's what the company gives me to drive it. I have no choice.
And do you have to pay for the gas, or do they pay for the gas?
Yeah, yeah. I don't pay for it. My personal car is a small little compact.
Okay. All right.
The other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, say the numbers are going down, but what I find that a lot of people are buying big boats. I got a buddy of mine just spent $120,000 on a boat. Okay, it's $2,000 to fill this thing up, and that's to go up the Connecticut River and to come back. Now, to me, that's the same thing that the boat floats and the car doesn't. Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I didn't know it cost that much to fill up a boat. What kind of boat is this? The Queen Mary 2?
It's a 54-foot Silverton.
I don't know what that means. I imagine it's like a yacht or something,
boat.
Right?
Yeah, it's a big boat. It's not a yacht, but it's real close to it. It's got two engines in it.
So for $2,000, you fill this thing up, you go up the Connecticut River and back down, and that's it pretty much?
That's about what it pretty much costs.
You know, for a lot less than that, you can just take the Port Jefferson Ferry over to Bridgeport, walk around a little bit, and come back. It's almost as much of a thrill.
Yeah, that's true, too. I'm saying, I know people complain about the SUVs. What about people buying big boats? There was a guy in Port Jeff Harbor the other day who had a speedboat, and you know that's using a lot of fuel, but
mm-hmm.
Just pulling it with a Hummer, too, so.
Great. I want to meet this guy.
Yeah, it's probably $300 or $400 at the gas pump.
Well, you know, it's their funeral if they want to do this kind of thing, but they should be paying through the nose for it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, we'll just see what happens. I love going to Europe myself and been there a couple of times, and whenever I you know, see how much fuel costs there, I gasp.
Yeah.
And that bit you were telling me about, what'd you say it was, 128 sterling?
I forget what it was in pounds, but it amounts to about $11 a gallon for diesel. And, you know, people drive smaller vehicles there. They're more intelligent about it. They save. They walk more. And we can do these things here as well. They have better mass transit. It's going to be painful for a while, but if we approach it intelligently, we'll be better for it, much better.
Well, we'll see what happens. I know people here, once it gets really, really bad, the prices will go down.
Yeah.
Well, I'll hang up. I think I hear other people dial.
Yeah, let me take us another call. Thanks for calling.
Not a problem.
Take care. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up. Are you there? All right, nobody's there. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Yeah, hi, Manuel.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm in East Mauritius.
Oh, great. East Mauritius. Out east a bit. So yeah, you're being hit by the storm as well, eh?
Yeah, we are getting it now.
Uh-huh. Cool. It's a lot of fun, I think.
You know, I'm sort of a train buff, and what I want to know is why can't they electrify and double-track the whole distance of the Long Island Railroad?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I imagine it's just more than they can handle as far as construction and things like that. I don't know if electrifying it is as essential. First of all, I'd rather have overhead lines than third rails. I think third rails are very dangerous.
Whatever, yeah, either way, except that the system is already partially
right.
developed with the third rail.
What I would prefer to see is more lines. Like, for instance, a north-south line would be a good thing to have. More cities that are served on Long Island.
And to develop lightweight cars that run up and down every 15 minutes, make frequency.
Yes, yes.
That would encourage. Now, I use a bicycle, and I have a pass. So I use the train, and I ride the bike to the train, put the bike on the train.
Oh, then
it's great.
You're very smart doing it that way. Then more people should do as you do, because we'd save a lot and we'd be much healthier for it. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks, and stay dry. It's a lot of fun out there tonight. Yes, we are, in fact, out of time. This does happen. It happens every time, doesn't it? We get a lot of calls. Okay, otw@2600.com is our email address. Remember, Off the Hook tomorrow, we have a major announcement to make. So stay tuned for that. See you next week. Stay dry. Good night.
Hey, kids, Finn with you at 7 p.m. right here on WUSB in Stony Brook.